Hi friends, today we will start with chapter 8 on operation research techniques in transportation. This is overall under our subject of distribution management. Let's set the learning objectives for us. The learning objective essentially is to understand certain operation research techniques which are available specifically for the solution of the transportation issues. And so that techniques are, some of them are listed out here. What is Northwest corner rule, they say, the model of listing. Then you have project management techniques which are PERT and CPM. We will try and study this about four modules today. My friendly suggestions to you, friend, will be that have the textbook available with you so that you will be in a better position to understand these subjects. I generally don't suggest this, but this being a pseudo, you know, technical and theory kind of a topic, what I have taken a call is like I will not get into explaining too much of a formula-based understanding. Formula-based understanding briefly given in the textbook. My suggestion to you is that, okay, in your first read, do see that, but essentially try to understand what this module is all about. What is it attempting to do? That should be your understanding part. So let's move on. And first we come to what is operation research technique so-called. So let's see this operation research technique in transportation. Now we have to define operation research techniques are used for number of other kind of projects and assignments. We will be limiting ourselves to solutions to the transportation problem. These are the four areas where we are going to talk about today. I have already told you this. So if we take the first model or the operation research technique, so to say, which is the Northwest corner rule. So what is Northwest corner rule? As you can see the two arrows out here, it tells you like it's a model or a technique which is devised to help you get the economical or an optimal transportation route. And now any distribution, there is always multiple points for where you have to reach your goods. Also, there are multiple supply points from where you have to pick up your goods and deliver it to the place where it is needed. That's where this Northwest corner rule technique come into picture. It tries to evaluate various combinations of the route from point X where the supply is to point Y where the demand is. And then ultimately it drives you and gives you the optimum route that you should adopt. Optimum route, when I say, it tells you what supply should go where and how it has to go, etc. So now here, as you can see, friends, you have a kind of a table, which is of course represented in a square box. On this side is the supply, S1, S2, S3. That means there are three supply points for a X company, you can say. Five demand centers are there. So you say whether it is five cities or five distribution centers, whatever. So there are five demand centers that has been given. For each supply center, what is the maximum supply that is possible is mentioned here. So for supply 1, it is 9 numbers that it can provide. Supply 2 can provide 4 numbers. S3 can provide 8 numbers. Similarly, in the bottom, what you see are the numbers which indicates what is the demand at that demand center. So D1 is, say, for example, 3, D2 is 5, then you have D3 which is 4, then you have 6, and then you have 3. Having said this, as we know now, this is where your demand is and this is where your supply points are. What you see the filled in bracket is numbers there are actually the cost of transporting X units S1 to D1 is 3 rupees, or you say $3 or whatever way you want to see it. Now that being a cost, which is what we are trying to minimize, it is shown into you as a negative number. So now with this, you get on to doing a permutation combination, which is of course explained in the book very well. But here idea is to see that how do you meet this 9 supply available and you meet the demand. So that's where various permutation combinations are worked out and you arrive at the next slide, which you will of course definitely see. The next slide indicates to you the total final allocation. So how do you go about distribution? It is revealed here. Generally the rule says you use the maximum supply in the first point. So here as I see that there was a 9 is a demand supply available. My demand here is 3. So if I move my truck from S1, ideally I should dump all the 3 units in D1. Then go forward the balance in the D2, and then I go forward if I have a balance stock available. So that way the distribution has taken place. That's the result why you see now only the limited fields which is filled in. I first dump 3 units in D1, then I go demand maximum is 5, so I dump 5 there. I still have one balance available. Demand in D3 is 4 units. I dump 1 in the D3, I come back. I have a next supply point which will directly go to D3, dump 3 there, dump 1 because maximum supply there is 4. So that's how this has been done. So you finally get this number which indicates from S1, the 3 units will go to D1, the 5 units will go to D2. That's how this is what is coming out. Now that's what is showing you also as a number. You extrapolate this, whatever the cost is linked to this, you add that, you will get an X and a sum as a number. Is this an optimum solution? Then the answer is no. Now that you have seen that this is how your overall distribution could be, however, there are negative, there are blank squares. Blank squares indicates a possibility that there is a possibility of rerouting something somewhere and maximize your transportation cost. It means at a minimum cost, you deliver maximum unit. So how do you go about that? There is again an algorithm that has to be factored in. I will start with one of the unit 1 out here, and then if I have to supply the another balance, so they say okay, you go up and then you go this way, try to see this, S2 is filled in, then D1 is filled in. So that's how you try and calculate what could be the number in other empty squares. So that overall will give you this idea. When you do this algorithm, the other fields get filled up. So what I was trying to tell you, friends, that all the fields are which are supposed to be positive, but except one field, which is -3. Now, what is the indication of that? That means there is still optimization possible. This, how do you do this? So again, you try to work around this -3, for which you have to again do a transportation algorithm, which is of course explained bit in the textbook as such. What will happen when you do this, others numbers also will start changing, but eventually those numbers will become zero and you will come to a point where this is coming to you as an optimum supply. You see that these gray numbers which I have highlighted to you are different from what was earlier stated. So this is what it indicates. Now what is an optimum supply that will have a minimal cost? So 3 units, 5 units, 1, you go back, the supply 2 will handle 4 units. Entire 4 units will be dumped into D4. This was not the case. If you see my earlier slide, 3 was supposed to be in D3 and 1 in D4. Now the rule says it is not that. All 4 should go into a D4. And then S3 will take care of balance 8. So that's how you, and then which you put now, this is the cost to that. Whatever cost that was given to you earlier, this addition if you do, this cost will be the minimal. Any other combination if you will take, the transportation cost will be more than this particular combination cost. So that's the beauty of this northwest corner rule. Why the name northwest is because it starts from here. So that's the northwest, it is trying to tell you how you would go and define your overall transportation model. So friend, this is a more an algorithm based module wherein what you essentially try to achieve is the combination from a supply point to a demand point using the available modes of transport with the known transportation cost that will help you to minimize your transportation cost, maximize your supply to the desired destinations or desired depots or desired demand centers, etc., as the case may be. So this is a one technique that we have studied. It's known as a northwest corner rule. Very critical for the distribution managers to understand this. And in real life, you may not probably have set of things like this, but it is always possible, irrespective of where your demand centers are or where your supply centers are, after you collect necessary information, it is always possible for you to plot this under this way. What essentially you need is a list of your demand centers, what is the demand there, your supply centers, what is the supply possible from that center. You need to know the transportation cost for various combinations from S1 to D1 how much, S1 to D2 how much, S1 to D3 how much, S1 to D4, 5 how much, same way for S2 and S3. You need to know the transportation cost. After that, then when you plot this, you get the maximum benefit for yourself. questions at times asked, and if that here one assumption, very important now for you need to notice, one assumption that has been made is demand is equal to supply. You see that number 21, this is the demand and I have full supply available 21, which is not a reality in the real market situations. So depending on if the demand is more, you add another column. If supply is more, you add another row, dummy row. This is known as a dummy row, but you still try and get the overall algorithm worked out that will give you an idea what is the best combination of routes and the distribution approach that you can have that will minimize your transportation cost. So now let's study the listing method. As the name suggests, essentially you have a point A, you have a point B or C, and then sequentially you have other destinations. Each has a distance, and then that's how you try to find out what is the shortest distance where you use the listing methods. I will show you with the example. So this is a model, modular representation. In real life, it need not be in this way, but you can see that there is point A and final destination point G, between which there are other destination points like B, C, etc. Now some of them are concurrent, some of them are like almost parallel to each other, some of them are out of way, some of them are, you know, at a diagonal level, etc. So those kind of permutation combination also do happen in real life. So for example, B and C, as you can see from point A, it is like almost equidistant. The distance are given to you in kilometers out here, 9 kilometers or 11 kilometers. It's like almost same, but they are in two different directions. From B to E or C to E, again, it is like, you know, one unified point where both supplies can come in, and supply from both the points can come in. In other words, supply from C can go directly to D, supply from C can come to E also, from E supply can go to D, etc. So these are those things that have been mentioned out here. So as many lines that you can see vis-a-vis other extended joints that you can make, that's what is the various routes available to you to reach out the goods in an optimal way to your destination G. Now you put a table, table will try and list A to B or A to C, etc. So that's a table. You see the table above, A, B, C, D, E, F. So that's the point from where can you go. So that is what has been mentioned out here. From A you can go to B, from A you can go to A, C, and then the distance is given there. Same way from B, where can you go? So from B you can go to C, B you can go to E, and B you can go to even A. And so that's what has been mentioned out here, and their distances are mentioned to you. Same way for each point that has been done. Now you get into what you call an elimination round. An elimination round starts with plotting what is the shortest route. You first say eliminate that. So when we came to AB being the shortest route, you eliminate, you remain with AC. You come to B point where AB, and again that was already removed. AC, again between BA, BC and BE, this one is removed, AC, because AC is now no longer a point that is needed. You have come to a point B, so to say. So you are going to work out various eliminations from point B. So having done that, you know, your A becomes zero because both these probable combinations are not there. A is considered zero. There is a starting point. Then you come to B and you have done an elimination for B. However, the value 9 comes because that is the shortest route that you have chosen. That is B to C or B to A to B. Okay, we have already taken A to B removed earlier, so we can't take B and A here out here. So B, C remains the shortest route. So about two, this thing removed and you left out with B, E. When you come to the C side, again, you get into what is the minimal. So same with the 9 being minimal. So now, when you did this, A became 0. What is the shortest distance that you have removed? That is at B point, that is a 9. So that's a 9. B gets a score of 9. At C, what is the shortest distance that you have removed? Again, that's a 9 that you have removed. Having done that, so 9 is added to B, so the C is 18. Same way you go on doing various eliminations based on the shortest route and the possible this thing. You come at this particular table, which is going to meet your demand. Now, if you see below the final, you keep doing this elimination till you get the final number, optimal number, where this is the root that is emerging, which is written in the bottom. As you can see, that is A to B, B to C, C to E you can go. From E you jump to D, then you go to F, and then you go to G. So that's the shortest distance that they are shown it to you. So that's the listing method by which you are able to derive what is shortest for you. Now, if you see this from this point of view, A to B, B to C, that is what it is saying. C to E. So C to E, you directly go. That is, you go down. From E to D, it is saying. So E to D, you go up. Then you come to F and G. So that's how overall the distribution that is taking place by using what you call the listing method. So we have studied two methods as of now, the northwest corner rule, and we have seen the listing method. Both is going to help you to determine the shortest or the optimal transportation route, having known the distance between two cities, the load or demand supply. In fact, the northwest corner rule even allows you to have the demand supply combination. The listing method only differentiates, or you have to come to this method and not use the northwest corner rule, is that every vehicle has a number tonnage limitations. So if I have an LCV, it cannot take more than 1.5 ton or 1 ton. If I have a truck, 9 or 10 tons. If I have a trailer, 40 tons. So each has that limitations. That limitation is taken care of when you use the listing method. So when there is a limitations of carrying capacity, then you move to the listing method as per the operation research techniques available to you. So we come to now the third subject, which is program evaluation and review technique. So let's understand this technique called PERT. It's a technique which helps any logistics or distribution management or any project manager to really find out where if the project moves, and which are the interlinked activities. So the dependency is come to known to him, and something which is interdependent, something which is not dependent, etc. Those factors will come out when the project manager really plots what you call PERT chart. As you can see in this particular chart, there are activities points which are given. So 1 to 2, from 2, 2 to 3 can happen, 2 to 4 can happen, etc. And that's how various this thing is shown. Now you see that certain lines are a thick line which indicates a real activity happening, while there are certain dummy lines, and there are certain dotted lines which are given, which is a dummy activity. We will understand this when we move forward, where in some software implementation example is taken. This is same from the book which I am talking about, which you must be referring. So this is how overall the PERT will emerge. You have activity 1 which will go take you to activity 2. From activity 2, maybe two different activity can take place. Each may be interlinked, each may be interdependent. So here, as you can see, 3 and 4 is not interlinked or interdependent, but 2 and 5 is interdependent. Activity 5 cannot happen if 2 doesn't get completed in time, or if that doesn't give the finished goods to point 5. But point 2 to 3 again needs to be completed, and 2 to 4 also needs to be completed. But it must be the task which, when completed, still doesn't hamper completion of the task 5. Therefore, you see that 3 to 5 is shown as a dotted line, and same is the case with 4 to 5. But having reached 5, you cannot move ahead if 3 to 5 is not completed or 4 to 5 is not completed. And then from 5 you go to 6, which is again an important path. From 6 again you diverge into two different activity areas, which is 6 to 7 and 6 to 8, etc. So overall what you see is the set of activity interlinked, interdependent, etc. will come out of it. So if we move forward, so let's first understand what is this PERT chart or PERT diagram is all about. It's a project management tool. Of course, being a project management tool, it essentially focuses on scheduling, organizing and coordinating various tasks. As a project manager, you will come to know what is the task overall. Having done that, which tasks are interlinked, which tasks are interdependent, etc., are something which is very critical for you to know to plan the project. Of course, it provides everything in a graphic form. You come to know various interlinks and interdependencies, etc., which essentially needs a proper breakdown of what the task is all about. From that task, what is going to happen next, etc. Those perspectives should be known, yani essentially that's what will make your PERT diagram more relevant, yani more accurate. PERT chart provides the project managers with indications about the time that is required. It talks about the minimum time that you may require to complete a project, yani. Of course, it also helps you to analyze the task, its connection, lead leg time, yani. When you put the time, what is the lead? That is, lead is the how much time you require to complete, but the leg is like how much is a scheduled time, expected time vis-a-vis actual time of completion. If that's a difference, there's a leg, as we say in the logistics term. So risk associated, etc., various things comes out of using the PERT chart. To explain you the PERT chart, these are some of the things that we need to really understand before we move on to this. You have seen one chart earlier, therefore I am taking a cue out here before. I will also effort to explain you as we move forward. But there are events that is taking place. There are events or a milestone that needs to be achieved. Each one has a task. Tasks are either interlinked or interdependent. So that is, you are shown this interlinking, interdependency, etc. by a line. What we call this activity, we overall plot. What we get is a network kind of a graph. Lines illustrates the project's interrelations and interdependency. From the line, the way it is depicted, you come to know this interrelation or interdependencies, etc. Event depicts a significant occurrence or a milestone which must be achieved before you are able to take the next milestone as a project activity. As I said earlier, there is some real activity that is to happen, or there are some dummy activity or support activity, as they say. So that's a dotted line, etc., as we say. So now let's understand this through a chart. Before we come to a chart, you need to know that there are numbered rectangles that you will see. These are the nodes, as we call, or as they suggest, a milestone or an event. After that, there are directional arrows which represents how the movement is happening. They are diverging arrows, yani. So you see that one from one particular event or a node, arrows are going into different directions. That is the divergence that is showing. And dotted line indicates the dependent task, yani, that do not require resource, yani. So it's like the task needs to be done, but it doesn't really require significant resourcing, etc. So let's understand this now with actual chart. Now this is a chart, so to say, of any program implementation or IT software implementation. If a company has taken a project to prepare some software and install at the organization level or a client level, this is how his probable chart will emerge. Now, as you can see that the 6 to 9 is shown as a dotted line, so to say. What could that be? I am just trying to give you an idea. But before that, 1 to 2 or 1 to 3 are the divergent activity. That is, to make a software, maybe two different things can simultaneously happen. On one hand, your team is studying the customer process. On the other hand, your team can start making a process flow chart. So there's the two things can differently happen. From process flow chart, you try and make a programming need identification, etc. From whatever you have studied at the client end, you create the process map, yani, or you create the right process, etc. That's your point 4. Now, point 4 and 5. So, from 5 to 4, you are again directed to a one direction. At the same time, you want to do something which is possible having done your process flow charting. So, that's how overall this thing moves forward. Idea is to also then show you finally what is the probable dummy activity, etc. So now that software is more or less in a ready state, so that is the movement on the above side, you need to also make say like a manual. You need to make an instruction manual or SO, standard operating process, etc., to give it to the client. Now this is not an activity which will hamper your project installation, yani your completion of the software and installation in the client place will not get hampered if your manual is not ready. It is essential, but it may be delayed. That's okay. So that's what example is of a dummy activity that you need to understand. So various projects have such kind of interdependency, interrelation or non-dependency as such. So the PERT chart really helps you to bring this out. So we are at a point where we need to understand what is the advantage of PERT chart. So PERT chart definitely offers advantage, like it helps you to plot the activity and its interrelation, interdependency, and gives you the indication of the time that you may require, the minimum time that you may require, helps the project manager to understand all possible flows that he can consider in execution of a project. It may even open for him an idea. When he starts plotting this, he may get an idea, okay, why not I connect these two points, and that's what probably will bring or shrink the activity timing, etc. Predictable deadlines can be met using PERT chart, etc. When you do this in a systematic manner, it gives you clear idea about dependencies between the two tasks. So you know exactly that what must be handled well and in time so that the next task is not affected. Otherwise, you go haywire. You try to focus somewhere and you miss out on certain other tasks, and then you realize, okay, this task not being completed, my another task got stuck. So this kind of interrelation, dependency, etc. comes out very well using a PERT chart for that any task or the project completion. However, every technique has its own limitations or a disadvantage. Deadline focus ignores the financial implications. The most and the only disadvantage is here in PERT chart, entire focus is on the deadline. Entire focus is to shrink the time. Entire focus is to see that how you minimize the time each activity that takes. However, in reality, to do certain such kind of an aspect, certain financial implications are there. If you have to complete certain activity in shorter time, maybe you'll have to deploy more resource, maybe you'll have to bring in more machines, etc. Now that is a financial cost to a organization. Now if you tend to operate only using a PERT chart, what it tries to tell you that you ignore the most important aspect, which is the financial implications on the project. Lack of flexibility to adapt to small changes. Having set your PERT chart and you started moving it, it doesn't allow you that flexibility that every time you keep changing the nodes and dependencies, interdependency, conjoint activity, etc. No, and then there is no use of PERT chart. So it's kind of a rigid in nature after you make it. Delays could occur, which is causing a bottleneck. In reality, delays do occur due to maybe something which is not plotted by you, and that creates a bottleneck. If you start working on a strictly as per the PERT chart, as they say that the smartness is to then at that point of time do things which will help overall meet the objective as well as organization's benefit, etc. But strictly going by PERT chart, yes, delay do occur and that may impact your way you take your project forward. PERT charts are subjective in nature. There are at every point so many combinations are possible. It is not that every project manager can think it that way. So it's an experience led. The project manager with only 1 month experience, his ability to develop a PERT chart knowing dependency, interdependency, vis-a-vis somebody who's done 5 years and 10 years of project work on a say construction work or on a pipeline installations, etc. That's a different ball game. Therefore, the subject that we are talking about as a limitation is a very subjective chart. So there is no technique or an objectivity in it. That's what it tries to tell you. Itself is a time consuming activity. Now look at example wise it is okay where I have to just join 8 to 10 points, but look at actual project. If you are building a multi-story building or you are laying a bridge across a large river, etc., that PERT chart development itself will take so long, because this project manager has to interact with so many stakeholders to derive what activity, what are the interlinks between the activity, dependencies, the time that they may take, etc., and then plot the PERT chart. So that's a limitation itself. Does organization offer you that freedom to take so much of a time? Will the organization not start the project if your PERT chart is not ready? That's a question mark. So that's the limitation of a PERT chart as people suggest about. Now, as you move forward, there is another one which is a critical path method. To a PERT chart, when you connect time, what comes out is a critical path. Each time and cumulative time as an interrelation as such. And then that time indication tells you where could there be a bottleneck, where could there be an issue of, affecting the next stage of activity of the project, etc. So, for example, if next stage of activity you think need to start on the 30th day, But your another time management that you have put in this indicates that the prior activities cannot get over before 33 days. Yani. So that's when you would now realize that by your this activity which is on 30th day cannot start on 30th day. So what can you do? And that's the question. So that's what critical path method tries to pull it out for you. So let's understand what is critical path method. Again, it's an algorithm based on scheduling of the project activities. It's a commonly used in conjunction with the PERT. So like critical path method does require plotting of activities and therefore it is an interrelated charts. A critical path is determined by identifying the longest stretch of dependent activities. Longest stretch. So in the PERT we tried doing what is the minimum time, while in the critical path method it focuses on trying to see what is the longest time or the stretch that each activity may need. Having done that, you then try to connect the various interrelated and interdependent activity to find out where you could be a bottleneck and where there could be a kind of a bottleneck which will hamper your next phase of the project. So start to finish connecting the time to overall your PERT chart, and then this time connect is also on the longest stretch, the longest time that you may need to complete the activity. It is taken on that basis. You will be able to derive where are you leading yourself to, and is there a bottleneck at some stage which needs to be attended to. The CPM method, as they say, is a step-by-step project management technique for process planning that defines critical and non-critical tasks with the goal of preventing time frame problems and process bottlenecks. So that's a definition that is for you of the what is CPM. So time frame problem and the bottlenecks. So it helps you to resolve any issues linked to the time framing of the project activities and their interlinking, or a bottleneck. What may create a major bottleneck for you? Once you know that, then you can focus on that. Overall, when you develop this, one probable path will emerge. If that is taken, that is known as a critical path. So every attention and activity and the focus should be on that path. Once you manage that path, all other activities around that path gets managed on its own, or it at least doesn't hamper the project. That's what it means. And these are the steps that you generally take in development of any CPM activity, which is to an extent say like network diagram. So step three, it is like as good as a PERT chart. After that, you derive the time of completion of various activity. This is also on the maximum time that you may take, the longest time that you may take. While in the PERT, we were trying to focus on the shortest route or shortest time that is possible. This longest time indicators available to you, when you plot, will derive how each activity is linked with the previous activity's completion. When should the previous activity get over so that your current activity or the next activity can start, etc. So that when plotted, overall will bring out a critical path for you. Critical path can be updated as the thing changes, as the environmental change happens. Somewhere you are able to manage well and you have shrunk the time. Somewhere you are likely to face an issue, and therefore you can relook at your critical path. Either you may have to change your critical path, or it tells you whether putting more resource, whether putting more machines, or whether doing same activity differently will help you to shrink the time required. And that's what will keep your project on track. So this is the indicative critical path for you. What needs to be understood is four areas first. Yeah, optimistic time, the pessimistic time, the most likely time, and the mean time. Of course, it has been well defined in the book, but as the name suggests, optimistic time is the shortest time. The shortest time in which each activity may get completed. Pessimistic time is the longest time that you may take to complete this activity. The most likely time is gut feel. I think, but though the minimum time required is 6 weeks, maximum could be 9 weeks, I feel 7 weeks should be sufficient to complete. So that kind of a language is indicative of most likely time. The mean time is a arithmetic time. You think pessimistic time and you think optimistic time, etc. You probably put in even most likely time. You arrive arithmetic mean out of that. That arithmetic mean time, if it is considered, that means you have developed your critical path based on the mean time. Meantime means there can be some activity which may go beyond the indicated time. There can be some activity which may get over before the time because you have taken a mean time. So depending on what is in the interest of your project, you can decide which time frame to operate. In the book, the example which has been given, wherein entire table and calculations are shown, they have taken the mean time. That's fair enough, Yane. So you see that various interlinking of the activity here, 1 to 3 and 1 to 2, they are both divergent activity. From 2 to 8, that is 2 to 4 and 4 to 8 is a dummy activity which may not require focus or an attention till the 8 is reached. Yane, 8 will reach by from the 3, again you have a 2 divergent activity, 5 and 6, and then you have 8. But prior to 8, again there is one dotted activity, 7. What is indicated in this, when you really find a critical path, activity like 1 to 3, 3 to 5 and 5 to 8 needs to be managed well. That's your critical path, shown here in the red. So this activity falls on your critical path. If you manage them very well, your project will get completed well in time. So that's how the critical path will evolve. When you start plotting the time, time has again 4 different ways of plotting, which we have understood. When you do that, interlinked path will emerge, which is the critical path, shown here in the red line. So there are concepts that needs to be understood when it comes to critical path method, and what they call project crashing. This is in order to accelerate, one allocates more resource. And now that here you have realized that this is what it is. Now if the management or a client or somebody tells you that I want to get this thing done in a shorter time. So now to do this, you relook at your critical path, decide how you can manage, either by putting more resources, more investment there, more machinery, etc. And then you try to work out, or is there an alternative way of doing same things, etc. And then you try to shrink the time, that is project crashing, as they say. Crash duration is like, refers to the shortest possible time for which an activity can be scheduled. So we have earlier studied the 4 different types of time considerations. Here crash duration operates on shortest time that it may need to complete any activity, which is optimistic time that we have referred earlier. So that you have earlier say worked out that my project will need 55 months. Using crash duration or using whatever that shortest time, etc., you are able to say that you can complete the project in 50 weeks. So 5 weeks is a crash duration. You have achieved the 5 week of crash duration, based on CPM study for any project. So crash duration is the time that you can save using the shortest time that is required for completion of each activity, between each activity, kind of. So that's what is that another terminology very important for people of who wants to really understand the CPM better. Advantage of CPM, again, critical path method identifies the most important task for you in your path of project, or the interlinking, the strong interlinking and interdependency between two activity comes out. Having known the time related aspect to various activity, you are in a position to manage time well. Managing time will help you to probably shrink your project duration. It will help you to compare your plan with actual. So in CPM, you are now able to plot also simultaneously when you actually complete the activity. So you plot your those time, dates, etc. What will facilitate is like, where have you achieved before time, where have you lagged behind, etc. So those aspects, so you are able to improvise your planning in future. So that's what is another advantage, that by project plan versus actual can be derived using CPM method. Again, limitations or the disadvantage of the CPM methods are it doesn't adapt well for making changing on the fly. So changing on the fly is like, environment is very dynamic, various things can happen. Suddenly a strike somewhere, suddenly the flood, or natural calamities hampering your supplies, etc. So can CPM be changed so drastically, so frequently? So it says no, it is not possible to do so if you are using a critical path method. Drawing a CPM diagram itself can take a lot of time. It is a one step after the pod. We have earlier also in the pod chart making, we have seen that the time taken to make them itself is a challenging decision for the management. Now, CPM comes after that. And so, it's like overall what we are trying to tell you is the time is a biggest bottleneck of dependency on CPM method. So, people probably may not use it so intensively, or they may start the project, have the CPM being developed, and then seeing both the things to see that overall you achieve the desired result. You may have to guesstimate a time. So, many times this concept of shortest time, mean time, or you know, likely time or pessimistic time, etc., are the guesswork of project managers or contractors, etc. Based on this, you have developed your critical path method, may lead you to bottlenecks at times. It doesn't work if chosen trade-off is cost. So, CPM calls for the CPM rather ignores more of the cost aspect. We have in part also we have seen that it doesn't take into account the financial implications. Same is a case with the CPM also. So, if the trade-off emphasized on you, which is a cost, that cost must be controlled at any cost, in that case, the CPM as a technique may not help you in a desired manner. So, because CPM will at that point of time will only look at how to shrink time. So, the resource management or the other adoption will be demanded. Which if cost as a trade-off is pushed onto the project, by then cost is a, if any cost escalation in it needs a final approval, then that will all hamper the use of CPM in your project management. So, cost and CPM or cost and PERT have a two opposite linkages. That is a one biggest disadvantage of both this technique, so to say. So, friends, we have studied what we call the operation research technique in transportation management, essentially a distribution management. Using operation research techniques, how could you select the right and appropriate route for your transportation, which will minimize your overall transportation cost, which is from a supply point to demand point, how optimally can you reach your goods. And we have also seen two project management techniques, which is PERT and CPM. Thank you.